How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you. Dr. Ray the Great.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
They don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Do you remember in COVID when they were dictating how you were to live? And you were told by the experts that you can have gatherings with up to 8 people without issues. I remember thinking, I don't even know 8 people without issues. Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. Big, long, well, it's not a stack. What would you call it in your phone? Big, big, big bunch of E-Persons I got to get to, and I want to get to some of them today on the program. But before I do, I'm going to venture into a bit of a treacherous territory because it's so easily to be misunderstood. And it probably will step on some very sensitive nerves. Not on purpose, but because many people are absolutely convinced that indeed this is their situation and that in fact I don't want to say trivializing it, but minimizing it or toning it down, which I don't mean to do, not at all. Let's get that said right here. I guess what I want to say is the way the language is altered, psychologically speaking, in our society very rapidly. There is a phrase very commonly used, emotional abuse. That relationship is emotionally abusive. I feel emotionally abused. I've been emotionally abused. I don't have to deal with that kind of emotional abuse. So the first question I would ask is, what constitutes emotional abuse? If we say, well, obviously it is hurtful, perhaps threatening, demeaning, put downish, relentless, and it engenders in me some very unpleasant emotional reactions. Okay. So we've tried to define it a little more closely. But we're still left with a continuum. In essence, how emotionally abusive does something have to be called emotionally abusive? The place where that is most common used is marriages or relationships, man, woman. Because it's considered emotionally abusive because of its repetitiveness. The person's critical, or they attempt to demean, put down. Therefore, we label that conduct, those words, emotionally abusive. Here's the question. How much control do I have over my own emotional reaction on the basis of somebody else's conduct toward me. Let's say that I have a person who seems to revel in being mean or nasty or critical, argumentative, just downright unpleasant and difficult. Is that emotionally abusive? And I guess it comes down to depending upon my reaction to it. How much does it bother me? How much does it get to me that I can label that person emotionally abusive? Dr. Ray, you're playing with words. Whether it's difficult, whether it's nasty, whether it's unpleasant and demeaning, it's mean. That may be. And the person may intend to be mean, by the way. They may have every inclination to make you feel terrible. Here's the question. Do you have to make them, allow them, do you have to allow them to make you feel as terrible as you think they want you to feel? If you recognize that people close to you, parents, adult kids, spouses, a boss, can be very difficult, and that difficulty can manifest itself in the way they treat you. Is that emotional abuse, or is that just ugly, nasty mistreatment? Dr. Ray, it's one and the same. No, not necessarily, because the person in that connection is you. Let's say that somebody sends me an email that is just vicious. Up one side and down the other, just an attack. Now, I can react to that and say, wow, that was just an emotionally abusive email. I suppose I could. Or I could look at the email, I could assess it, I could decide as best I can, subjectively that is. Is it legit? If I, in my best judgment, say it's not, the person is accusatory, they've misunderstood, they've misheard, they're calling names, whatever they're doing. It's not really emotionally abusive, it's just an ugly email. How I react to it has great power in whether I consider something emotionally abusive or not. Let's say you're in a relationship with a spouse who in a lot of ways just seems to have, at the very least, a thoughtlessness in the things they say or they do. And they're repeated enough that the cumulative effect is taking a toll. At some point, could you not look at this and recognize that this is them? This is not necessarily you. The fact that they act this way or say these things is coming from something within them, their insecurity, their sense of I've got to be in charge, whatever it might be, but really you don't deserve that kind of treatment, so therefore it's losing its power over you. Those words you've heard before. You've heard them 266 times before. They should lose potency. And if they lose potency, they're not as emotionally abusive. Oh, they're nasty. Yeah, I got that. Difficult? Yeah, sure. But how much something is emotionally abusive, we still have great control over. No, Dr. Ray, you're missing it. There are some people. There is a person in my life that is so absolutely nasty, so absolutely unreasonable, so absolutely unrelatable, that when I'm around them, my emotions are a mess. All right. So what you've just said is that this particular individual has the one with the most potential to make you feel terrible. The question can still be asked. Do you need to give that person that kind of power? They can say what they want. They can accuse you of what they want. They can pull a double standard on you all the time. Again, for it to have that kind of emotional impact, to be labeled, a very strong word now, abusive, you still have great control over. I know people think, no, I don't. Your emotions just react. You can't control your emotions. They just are. If that is your belief, that your emotions are just going to happen, kind of like a reflex, then you're kind of at the control of what another person says or does. It's true. You have to hope that they don't get nasty. Because if they do, then your emotions are going to follow. I don't have too many people in my life that I would consider emotionally abusive. As a matter of fact, I don't have anybody. Now, one could say, well, that's because you watch who you hang around with or you're fortunate enough to have a decent family. That's all true. But I think it's also part of the fact that I don't want to give somebody that kind of power over me. If they're legit in what they say, then I got to consider it. But if I consider it as best I can with God's help, and I don't think so, they aren't going to have a whole lot of power to make me feel bad. That's not going to happen. And so, emotionally abusive, my opinion. Good news, bad news. The bad news is it's heavily overused. The good news is you still have a lot of personal control over what is and what isn't emotionally abusive. Dr. Ray.
Don't go anywhere.
Because I'm a doctor, that's how I know.
How would you like to celebrate the Divine Mercy at the Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Poland on Divine Mercy Sunday? Well, you can. Steve Ray here, inviting you to join us in Poland as we follow the footprints of John Paul II, Maria Faustina, and Maximilian Kolbe. Daily Mass at the most iconic, beautiful churches and delicious local foods. Join us in April for Divine Mercy Sunday in Poland.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes them at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday variant. I used to say version. Can't say version anymore. Keeping up with our viral lingo. Remember when viral used to be bad? Now viral is something you want, right? My post went viral. So, this is E-Person Monday on The Doctor Is In. Now, this is where I get a little nervous when an E-Person starts out like this. I know there's a big but somewhere in the lines of this E-Person. I love listening to your program and advice. All right. Call me wary. Call me hypervigilant. Where's the but? I am a wife, mother, grandmother, RN for 38 years, and Catholic convert since 2013. Okay, so far no but. Here it is. One area of disagreement with you, however, regards tattoos. I have 8, and they all have meaning, and I view them as beautiful artwork. Perhaps it is simply a generational difference, Dr. Ray. Thank you. Okay, so where is the disagreement here? Because I wrote very briefly back to this writer, and the disagreement, I remember the tattoo thing has come up a number of times. One of the points I make is that it is incredibly significant. It is emblematic. Ha! No pun intended. It pictures the sheep-like nature of our culture, of social norming. Tattoos have just absolutely exploded onto the scene the last 10, 15 years, 20 years. They were one time pretty much confined to people who were in the military or maybe had a small kind of hard to see tattoo for some personal reason. Now they're billboards all over, up one arm, one down the arm, up the back, up the neck, up the legs, just everywhere. Now why? See, one of the points I made, I think, when I talked about this, was that what is it? What is it about the explosion of tattoos among younger people that is now just part of the scene? If you don't have a tattoo, you're in a distinct minority. Now, many people will say, well, they have meaning to me. I do it for meaning. Or some of them say, I have a religious tattoo. I'll have something that shows I'm a follower of Christ. But I think it's still safe to say that for most people, tattoos are some kind of artwork expression. So what was it that our writer heard me say that she disagreed? I think she heard me say that all tattoos, no matter what, no matter who, no matter how, no matter why, are not good. No, I never said that. I mean, who am I? You want to get a tattoo, that's your business. All right. The only way that the church would stand on that by saying it depends what that tattoo says. All right. You start putting things up there that are blasphemous or satanic or grossly sinful. Yeah. You, the church, would say, oh, not good. Don't do that as a follower of Christ. But most people still don't do that. All right. So she heard me say that somehow, if she had a tattoo, now she said she's a wife and a grandmother, RN for 38 years. So let's just say she got her RN, she graduated at 22, so she'd be 60, roughly. She's in her 60-ish. She heard me say that she was wrong. I never ever even implied that. My whole comment was wrapped around the idea that this shows you how powerful social norming is. It's that way in the way we speak. The word like. 30 years ago, nobody spoke like except the cliche stereotypical Valley girls from California. So, like, I mean, you know, like, I just thought, oh, that was, like, the coolest thing I ever did. So I, like, said, well, like has taken over the language. Everybody says like. Even the most supposedly articulate, getting paid millions of dollars a year, anchors and pundits and interviewers, like is everywhere. Or I've even talked about this before, the word perfect. I first noticed it probably about 5 years ago when I was renting a car. I gave him my address, and the counter person said, perfect. And I thought to myself, well, how does he know I gave him the right address? I could have given him the wrong address, and it wouldn't have been perfect. And I'm thinking, now I'm several states away from my home. The word perfect, huh? And in short order, perfect is everywhere. It is now the new word. You think about it. You get on the phone and you give somebody your address or your name, or you spell your name, or they ask you questions. I guarantee you, 50% of the time at least, you're going to hear perfect. Now, why? What is it about a word that was not part of that contextual vocabulary 10 years ago, at all, zero, has now become flush in the way we speak? And I think that was part of what I was saying about tattoos and what she heard me saying about the tattoos was that what's with you if you wanted to have these? Now, she pointed out she's probably in her late 50s, early 60s, and she said it's generational. But interestingly enough, I would want to say to her, when did you get them? Did you get them 30 years ago when pretty much nobody had them? Or did you get them recently? And if you got them recently, what was your motive? If you say, well, I like the artwork. Or if you say they have meaning to me. She says all have meaning. Okay, then why not 30 years ago? If they have meaning, why not then? Why now? And it's something that I'm starting to suspect that she got these later in life because she said, perhaps, Dr. Ray, it is simply a generational difference. In other words, her motive for getting these tattoos was because they had meaning. Maybe somebody she knows and loves, the passing of someone, a religious indication, something. And she admired the skill of the person who's been able to put these kinds of representatives or representations on her skin. Fair enough. Well, then why not when she was 25? Now, one can say, well, no, Dr. Ray, they didn't have the meaning when I was 25. My mom and dad didn't pass away when I was 25. My mom and dad passed away 3 years ago. Okay. Again, fair enough. Is that all of them? Is that the reason? Or is there something that is now considered okay about tattoos, no matter how old you are, that wasn't okay 30 years ago if you were 60. How many 60-year-olds did you know 30 years ago who had tattoos? Just saying. Theme parks, and you're up 180 feet, you're moving at 110 miles an hour down the first hill, and they can snap this crystal clear picture of you, flat out, better than anything you could get in a photography studio. But then these bank cameras can't get a clear shot of the robber who's standing still. You never notice that? It's like, wow, maybe they ought to put money. You know, you can buy a clear shot of the person robbing the bank. Like you can buy a clear shot of you on a roller coaster screaming. Dr. Ray Grindy here, the program the doctor is in. And, well, there were some, there were some folks in the media, some mental health types. And this does not surprise me because this goes right with my opening monologue, which talked about if somebody makes you uncomfortable, then you just get rid of them in your life. Which, on one hand, you can probably do that if it's the lady that's five doors down on your street. And the only time you see her is when you go by and you beep and she gives you a glaring, dirty look. So you stop beeping. What if it's your mom? Your brother? Your 26-year-old kid? So this whole idea that if you make me uncomfortable, if I don't like the way you think, get out of my life. This doesn't surprise me because so often in mental health, the expert types talk about the most important thing in all of life is you. That's what matters the most. And if anyone in any way makes you uncomfortable, get out of your life. Dear Dr. Ray, since this past election, my brother, who lives in California, has been so angry that he has sent out an email, first to me, then to others in our extended family. Here's the email. I am purging all MAGA persons from my life. If this pertains to any of you, then to you I say adios. She says, I've long made it my policy not, big capital not, to discuss politics with my brother. But he sent this out to relatives who are conservative Catholics or Christians. None, and she capitalized none again, of us have been discussing politics with him. I'm quite sure. We all know better. I'm not sure what to do for him, besides prayer and sacrifice on his behalf. Well, there's nothing you can do for him. He wrote you off. We have a hard time with that. When people say, get out of my life, we have a hard time saying, okay. We think, well, no, I can't let him do that. Well, if he's adamant, what are you going to do? Sounds like he's more than adamant. Sounds like he's vitriolic. Do I say anything to these other relatives on the purge list? I think they are looking to me for guidance. Well, I suppose you could say, did you get that letter from our brother or this particular individual? Yeah, what do we do? Nothing. He did it. But Dr. A, we don't understand. We do not discuss politics and religion with him. We know better. He seems to have minimal, if any, ability to carry on a discourse with anybody that doesn't think like he does. All right. Then why would he do this to you? There's a simple answer. I know how you think. That's what it's come down to now. You are no longer safe in keeping controversial opinions to yourself as someone else sees your opinions as controversial. Maybe 40 years ago in our culture, they wouldn't have been so controversial. But now they are. There's an awful lot of things out there that at one time were kind of viewed as just reasonable common sense. Not anymore. They have brought into the realm of you are not permitted to think a certain way about these. And if you do, then you're a lost cause, you're an evil person, you have all kinds of flaws in your psychological makeup. So given all that, he's decided, all you people, get out of my life. I saw a statistic. They surveyed people who were self-reported to be on the left side of the political spectrum. And again, that's a broad generalization, but that's how they self-identify. And they surveyed those on the right side, as they define themselves. What they found was people on the right side were much more likely to have friends and contacts with people on the left side who do not think politically or even religiously like they do. Much more likely to have still connections with people like that. Those on the other side, the left side, were much less likely. They were more prone to, if you don't think like I do, I don't want anything to do with you. I've not seen this as a psychologist, even just informally, in social relationships until maybe 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. Now, one might say that Donald Trump is a very polarizing figure. But even at that, I think the politics, the religion too, in our country has gotten to the point where you can't even have discussions. You can't say to somebody, so I'm curious, how do you think that? Why do you think that? Where did your information from that come from? Where was that? You can't even do that. I consider myself reasonably adept at getting inside someone's head and finding out why they think the way they do, without being confrontational, without challenging them, without in any way implying you're so goofy to think that. But even at that, I find that you have to be so very careful, because if you ask a question that requires them to explain something that they've not really thought much about, that they've just more or less been clinging to a cliche, they get angry. I'll comment on this real quickly when we get back. What to do about her. Let me see, is that a brother? Yeah, it's her brother. Okay, Dr. Ray. Posted that they had just made synonym buns. Synonym, spelled S-Y-N-O-N-Y-M. Synonym buns. They had just made synonym buns. And I answered, you mean just like the ones that Grammar used to make? I'm blocked. Just to close up this particular e-person, she writes and says her brother, who lives in California, just sent out an email. I'm purging all MAGA persons from my life. This pertains to any of you, then to you I say adios. She's saying, what do we do? Not much. I might send him an email and say something to the effect of, geez, I'm so sorry to hear that, especially given that we don't discuss politics with you. And hopefully you'll recognize that we can still have a relationship even though we see things differently. Something like that. But real short, sweet, to the point. That's it. That's probably what I would do. She says, we don't discuss politics. We know how he stands. Okay. But he knows how you think. And unfortunately, that's what's happening these days. I had a young niece. Well, she's not young anymore. She's an adult. And she said at one point, "You and Aunt Randy are the most judgmental people I know." And I asked her, I said, when did we ever comment or say anything about what you've done in your life or with your life or how you think? And she couldn't come up with one example. And I remember thinking, well, she knows how we believe. She knows how we view life. She knows how we're raising our children. And because of that, she extrapolates. You therefore are judgmental of me because you choose to do it this way. Yeah, it is a complete and total non sequitur. Sorry for the Latin lingo there, but I did have 3 years of Latin, and every once in a while I remember something from my Latin. Okay, all right, let's leave that one behind. Dr. Ray, I have tried to call the show 2 times, but I've gotten no answer. I'm calling from Europe. Part of that may be that we don't take calls on an e-person Monday. So if she called on a Monday, she obviously is not going to get a live connection. She says, I wake up with bad panic attacks, and it's very scary. Sometimes it takes time to fall back to sleep. Thank you for a reply. I hope. Well, here's hoping. There is a phase of sleep called REM sleep, rapid eye movement. And it's called that because if you look at a person's closed lids during this period of sleep, you would see kind of a very rapid back and forth of their eyes, their pupils, their irises. And this, during REM sleep, is usually when much, if not most, dreaming occurs. During REM sleep is something called an autonomic storm. Heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up, breathing goes up, galvanic skin response, sweating goes up. The body just reacts. The only thing that doesn't go up, believe it or not, is muscular movement. The theory is that that's a protection device to keep you from acting out these dreams. And you've seen this. You've woken up during periods of your sleep, and you're paralyzed. It's like, I can't move. I can't move my arm. Right? Because you're just coming out of that phase because you've woken up. Now, the thing that scares her is, for whatever the reason, she wakes up periodically in one of these phases. And she's very anxious. But the anxiety is just a physiological, more than likely. Now, again, she needs to check with her doctor and get this all, as best as possible, ruled out that there's anything going on. Likely not, but to rest her mind. And if not, then she recognizes that, oh, okay, I'm waking up during this phase of my sleep, during this stage of my sleep. It's not threatening. She says it's scary. Well, yeah, that it is. It's a fear reaction. But all it is a physiological fear reaction. There is no threat. There's nothing there. There's no saber-toothed tiger in that room. Nobody's busted into the house. It is just I woke up feeling very, very physiologically aroused. That's all it is. So if you recognize that, it's in short order, you calm back down. You do. It is the fear of the fear that keeps it lingering. What is wrong with me? What is going on with me? Could I be having a heart attack? Am I going to die? My body. My body's going haywire. I can't control this. This is crazy. All those thoughts, which are erroneous, make you very terrified of that experience. But if you recognize that that experience, after you get a clean bill of health, in all likelihood, is just you awakening for whatever the reason, who knows, sleep is a mystery, awakening during that stage of sleep, the REM stage, where your body is on high alert. If you slept through it, you'd still have the same reaction, but you wouldn't be awake to know that you're having that reaction. So if you recognize there's nothing here threatening you, there's nothing here that's going to hurt you, your body is not going to turn on itself, you will most likely, quietly over time, have these events just fade away. Okie doke. All right. Hopefully you won't have to call in from Europe. I'm Dr. Ray.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck.
The battle is fierce in the church today. The Lord's totally in charge and calls us to participate in his mission. But our nation itself is convulsing. There's just massive division and struggle and problems that are going on. There's a lot of stuff that's, I think, profoundly offensive to God. And we as a people can make a huge difference simply by living differently in these days. So Jesus said, if you want to become my disciple, my follower, you must deny yourself. To deny yourself is to deny the capacity in us to just simply say, I'm my own master, I'm my own maker. Instead, it's a heart change. It's a directional change. And say, now, the life I now live, I'm living by faith in the Son of God. I want what he wants. And second, take up your cross daily. The cross isn't just simply, oh, I got a headache today. The real cross is standing against, in love, in courage, the resistance of the world, of political systems and social networks and things that literally stand against God and the will of God and God's plan. And if you said, yes, Lord, I want to follow you. I'm putting you first. I want to deny myself, pick up my cross, and I want to come after you because I want to seek to please you in all my life.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on Ave Maria Radio.
Okay, one more e-person. Listening to your anxiety segment, and it seems like you're almost dismissing anxiety. No, never would do that. I was talking about what anxiety was for many, which is fear of being anxious. I needed my organs imaged in an MRI. I told the tech that I have panic attacks, that I'm on meds, and that I would do the MRI for the required 20 minutes, but please let me out if I press the button. Yes, every time I've had an MRI, the text will tell you, here's the button. If you get claustrophobic, if this sends you into kind of a panic reaction, press this button, we'll pull you out. That's right. That's routine. That's standard. Do you know what he did? He kept me in there for 30 minutes, and he didn't let me out after I pushed the button. Told me he would not let me out until I calmed down. Thank God my husband was there to help me stay calm and heard my screaming. Ooh, I'm tearing up at the thought, and I'll never get in one of those again unless I'm totally knocked out. A psych doc explained that some of us are hardwired for panic from years of childhood abuse. Yeah, there can be roots of certain kind of panic. There can be roots for temperament. A lot of panic attacks are inexplicable, or they're triggered by something like elevators or an MRI. I've even woke up during surgery swinging. Panic and adrenaline is a real thing when deeply rooted. Yes, no question about that. It's a very real thing. And again, this shows you how people mishear what you say. I didn't say it wasn't real. I said you recognize what it is. In most cases, it's not dangerous. In other words, her panic was something she didn't want to experience. Okay, get me out of this. Got it. But if she would have said, all right, this is extremely, extremely unsettling. I don't like it. It's distressful. However, I'm not in any danger. It will stop. It will pass. It does. Anxiety always passes. All right. She says, my anxiety isn't that I'm afraid of fear. I'm afraid of being stuck in a vulnerable position and not able to protect myself. See, that? No, that's the standard response, which is, I need an escape. I don't want to be in an elevator, in an MRI, facing a dog, in a dentist chair, having to give a speech, on a plane, in heights, somewhere where I don't have an escape. And that again, it can keep the anxiety going. Because as long as I have an escape, then I can take it. But as soon as I take it, I just lock in the anxiety further. There's the difference. So I'm not saying the anxiety is not real. It's very, very real. But it's a physiological reaction, same as fear, but where there's no threat. There's the difference. So it's easy to misunderstand. And it sounds like that this has been something for her that has been very long-standing, years and years and years and years. And typically what happens, and the implication here towards the last paragraph was, it spreads. This kind of anxiety generalizes. It moves to different places. It isn't just an MRI. It may now be in anything that evokes a sense of closeness. Maybe sitting in the middle of a church pew when it's Christmas Eve Mass and everybody's packed in and you are shoulder to shoulder and this is driving you crazy. I got to get out of here, or I got to sit on the end, or I got to stand in the back. Those kinds of things can happen, or a crowded restaurant or a crowded store or standing in line. Anxiety tends to generalize, and the key is, in the vast majority of cases, this is the exact same reaction you would have if someone came at you threatening your life. Or just threatening you. You wouldn't have to be threatening your life, but in some kind of danger. If a big dog started charging you, you would have a severe panic reaction. You would. The difference is, the dog represents danger. The MRI does not represent danger. It represents distress. It represents a very, very distressing experience. But it's not danger. And there's the difference. You don't have to escape the MRI for your own well-being and safety. You may want to escape it because you don't like the feeling of the anxiety. And that's the trick in all that, is that the more you do that, the more the anxiety gets locked in. So, alrighty. Well, I got to run. I do appreciate the company here on The Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday. And I thank Eric Dumont for taking care of things on that end over there at Ave Maria Radio. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications, some 400 and some stations, as well as Sirius Satellite Channel 130. Thank you for keeping me company. I appreciate it so very, very much. Walk with God. That is a calming walk.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.